Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we got something special in store for you today. We've got an expert on prostate problems, and we're going to talk a little bit about the highly controversial study which talks about the relationship, the supposed relationship, between fish oil and a higher risk of prostate cancer. Our guest is Dr. Gio Espinosa. He's a good colleague of mine. He is a naturopathic physician, and he is currently working on the conventional side as part of a unique collaboration between alternative medicine and conventional medicine in meeting the challenge of men's health problems. So without further ado, let's introduce Dr. Gio Espinosa. Gio, it's a pleasure talking to you once again here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Rod, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, tell us a little bit about your unique background, first of all. You are a naturopathic physician, but you're also very, very specialized in your training because I think perhaps you're unique among naturopathic physicians because you have a specialty in the field of urology. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in that and what you're doing now.
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Yeah, so, you know, at this point, I'm a naturopathic urologist, meaning that my training was in naturopathic medicine, and then I went on and specialized in urological conditions. So after I had, I finished my naturopathic training at the University of Bridgeport, I went on to Columbia University at the Center for Holistic Urology with Dr. Aaron Katz, and I spent 5 years there doing research and really learning more about the conventional side of things in terms of, you know, all the possible treatments at the time for prostate cancer, and not only prostate cancer, but things like prostatitis and interstitial cystitis and erectile dysfunction and chronic UTIs and things like that. So I was fascinated by it, quite frankly. You know, as a naturopathic doctor, as you alluded to, you generally become a general practitioner. You don't really specialize. Well, I decided to take the road less traveled, and partially probably because I just thought way back when, well, you know, I'm not sure that I'm smart enough to do everything and figure out every remedy from a conventional side and a naturopathic side of things. I need to really specialize, and so let me figure out what I actually like. So I really do enjoy working with men and prostate issues. I do a lot of work with prostate cancer, as you know. But prostatitis and BPH as well, erectile dysfunction, and the other specialty of mine within urology is the interstitial cystitis. You know, those are areas where patients just have a really hard time with conventional therapies in terms of prostatitis, pelvic pain, and interstitial cystitis. So I think that what we do and what naturopaths do and integrative practitioners do is very beneficial. So now I'm here at NYU running the Integrative Urology Center, where we offer a very multidisciplinary comprehensive approach, primarily towards prostate cancer.
And that's fascinating because generally we see, you know, traditionally we thought the battle lines are pitched between naturopaths and conventional doctors. Often, you know, we in the natural medicine movement are branded as quacks or outsiders. And yet you're literally in the belly of the beast. Your paradigm has been embraced by some of the conventional physicians at NYU. Where I actually trained many a year ago, nearly 30 years ago, I was a resident there at NYU. And I have to say that at that time it was none too hospitable to complementary and alternative medicine. And yet you've achieved a balance there where you work together with conventional urological surgeons and conventional doctors, oncologists, and so on.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's really a dream come through for me just because I work very tightly, very closely with urologists particularly. And, you know, they have a good appreciation of what I do, what naturopathic medicine can do for their patients. Of course, we're very responsible. It's a multidisciplinary approach, meaning that we have a lot of things for our patients to offer. We have great surgeons. We have great robotic surgeons. We're studying focal therapies for prostate cancer. We're studying targeted biopsies as opposed to blinded biopsies. At the same time, we offer these targeted, individualized type of protocols that we can offer them in terms of naturopathic medicine to improve their prognosis and kind of create a microenvironment that's hostile to prostate cancer. So,
right. As I sometimes say, make it so that no self-respecting cancer would ever want to inhabit your prostate with all that, all those good phytochemicals and nutraceuticals at high levels there.
Hey, can I quote that on my next book?
Absolutely.
I'll give you all credit for it.
Thanks. Well, it sounds like you employ a true intelligent medicine approach over there, the best of both worlds. But let's get back to the subject of this podcast, which is our response, our mutual response, because both of us independently wrote very, very pointed rebuttals to the recent prostate cancer study, which implicated omega-3 fatty acids in the causation, increasing the likelihood of prostate cancer. So first of all, tell us a little bit about the study as you see it, and what are some of the potential downsides? Because you actually put this up on your very excellent website at drgo.com. You have an excellent written rebuttal as well as a little bit of a video cast.
Yeah. Well, in my video cast, that was the second blog post that I put up. There was actually an interview between Michael Savage, who I don't know who he is. That was the first time I've ever heard of him.
Yeah, Michael Savage is a talk show host, and he used to be a host on my the radio station that I broadcast on weekends, WOR. He's no longer with WOR. He's on WABC. But a little story on this. I was in bed about to go to sleep, and I had the radio on, and I was listening to Michael Savage, and at the same time, I had my iPad. I was multitasking on my lap, and I looked at the Drudge Report, and I saw this study that said fish oil increases prostate cancer. And at the very self same time, presumably he was looking at the Drudge Report, and he started talking about it, and he got real excited about it. And
he sure did.
You know, he's a former interesting. He's a very right wing conservative talk show host. But actually, in a previous lifetime, he was an ethnobotanist, and he spent a lot of time in the South Seas. He studied tropical plants and animals for the phytonutrient capabilities that they might have. Yeah. So anyway, so he jumped all over that study. He was really down on it.
He did. He did. Even more interesting, Ron, it was that. Well, that was the first time I've heard of him. I came, I get all kinds of news wires, and so let me come back for a second. On Wednesday. About a week ago, last Wednesday, late afternoon, I get news wires as it relates to prostate cancer. So typically I get, firsthand information on what's happening in the world of prostate cancer, in terms of treatment studies and things like that. So I read this study. I read a news wire that came to me in terms of fish oil causing prostate cancer. Oh, shoot, no. Here comes
right.
The emails from all my
damage
patients.
Control, all of a sudden, right?
Damage control.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, lo and behold, a half hour later, I have about a dozen emails from patients.
Yeah.
Say, okay, I'm going to have to do my due diligence here and put something together. So, I went to sleep at 3 a.m, really putting together, I pulled the study. I read the study critically, and probably I don't remember the last time I've seen such an insignificant study as it relates to cause and effect. I can't remember the last time I saw such a thing. And so I put the study again, I read the study and I wrote up the blog. And then, of course, I see the point that I wanted to make with Michael Savage and his show was that he seems to be well-established PhD epidemiologist and nutrition from UC Berkeley, et cetera. More importantly, in that video, he interviewed probably the most well-known doctor as it relates to prostate cancer. His name is Anthony D'Amico.
And I heard that interview. I actually didn't see the podcast, but I'm glad you posted it because that was very, very significant. So tell us about that one.
So Dr. D'Amico is, they have the D'Amico risk factor for prostate cancer. I mean, they have things, risk factor after his name. He's very well known, very, very reputable, very highly credible physician.
And by the way, not a big firebrand about nutrition for prostate disease or prostate cancer prevention. He's just an expert on prostate cancer.
He's an MD, PhD, a PhD from MIT. Okay, well-credentialed. And he clearly points out that there is no cause and effect, that even people should not even stop taking their fish oils if that's what they take and they consider it to be protected. He makes some very strong statements into the fact that this study was very poorly done and probably should have not even been even published.
And actually, you know, what was interesting to me is, I mean, here's a guy, a very conservative scientist, and I don't think he is going to be hasty in jumping into conclusions. He's not a biased individual. But he looked at, I mean, this is stuff that really takes a scientist to pick apart. You know how hard it is to look at a study. And, you know, we tried to look at the study and pick it apart 6 ways to Sunday, but not even we are expert statisticians and trialists. So it really it takes expertise. So I feel sorry for the general public when they're trying to pick through this information. But he looked at it, and he said that based on the way that they structured the study, it almost looked like the guys in Seattle at Fred Hutchinson Cancer Institute stack the deck in favor of a hypothesis that they wanted proved, that they already kind of had a preconceived notion that fish oil wasn't going to be helpful, and they sort of threw out information or did not control for information that might have prejudiced their pre-conclusion. They didn't control for the fact that a higher percentage of the men with prostate cancer were African American, that they were obese, that they were diabetic or pre-diabetic, factors which are well known to increase the risk of prostate cancer besides taking fish oil.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't believe my ears when I heard this interview and that he opened himself up for such an interview. Again, I know him very well professionally. He goes to all the major urological and oncological conferences. He's well respected conventionally as a conventional doctor. So that, to me, okay, let's say that I'm biased. I try not to be. I try to be, you know, objective.
But full disclosure here. Frankly, we're both big believers in nutritional support for prostate cancer and for health in general. I mean, that's our orientation.
And on top of that, I strongly believe that fish oils are very helpful. All my patients are on some level of fish oils. So what's my point? What's my point and what's my my opinion on this study? So as soon as I read this study, I was like, wow, there's so many flaws here. Where do I start? There's no cause and effect. They look back at a study from 2008, the SELECT trial, which looked at, it was about $100 million trial. They looked at 35,000 people, trying to see if selenium alone or vitamin E alone or in combination, versus placebo as a control group, prevented the cause of prostate cancer. Well, that was the initial thing they were looking for, just as it relates to vitamin E and selenium. However, there were a lot of flaws even in that study, even from that design. The type of vitamin E that they looked at was simple synthetic DL alpha tocopherol, which scientifically, biochemically, DL alpha tocopherol, I don't want to be overly scientific for your audience here, but there's the whole family of the vitamin E and tocopherols involves gamma, beta, delta, and alpha. The DL alpha tocopherol actually kicks out the gamma tocopherol, which seems to be most protected, and most of the things we have in nature that have vitamin E contain mostly gamma tocopherol. So the bottom line is they didn't include the gamma tocopherol. They only included the synthetic version of DL alpha tocopherol. And lo and behold, there was a 17% increase in prostate cancer on specifically on the arm that had the vitamin E DL alpha tocopherol.
And so the natural headlines that emerged from that was that vitamin E,
right,
horror of horrors, causes cancer.
Causes cancer. That's correct. So there again, of course, I had to do a significant amount of damage control.
Right.
So here we are a couple of years later, 3 years later, and they look back at some of the specimen from the SELECT trial, which closed in 2008, and they looked at the amount of omega-3s, particularly EPA and DHA in the specimen, and they made the association that those that had higher levels of EPA DHA were at a 70% risk of aggressive prostate cancer. Now, here's the deal. Most men within time will develop prostate cancer. So if you live long enough, you'll develop prostate cancer if you're a man. That's not the issue, because close to 80% of prostate cancer that's diagnosed is indolent and nonspecific in terms of causing mortality.
So it may be like a few nests of prostate cancer cells that might be present if you sliced and diced the prostate enough with biopsies. You might find it in an 80 or 90-year-old.
You will, absolutely. Absolutely. The aggressive type is, of course, what we're trying to avoid. So if you look at this study, overview of the study and not really read the article critically, you think, wow, I certainly don't want to increase my risk of aggressive prostate cancer. In 2011, this same author, Brasky, wrote another study showing, or at least indicating, that DHA caused higher risk of aggressive prostate cancer. Again, they looked at old specimen. It wasn't a study. It wasn't a controlled study. It wasn't a prospective study looking forward at to see if there was a connection or not. It was a retrospective study, meaning looking back at previous studies, and in this particular case, looking at the specimen of a study that was performed in the past. In 2011, they did the same thing. Essentially, what it showed there was DHA, increased aggressive prostate cancer, and trans fatty acids decreased the formation of prostate cancer.
And I really found that interesting, because if you were to proceed from that finding, say, okay, let's accept that. Okay, now science now shows that there's a relationship. The consequence would be that you would recommend to people that they stop eating fish, they stop taking fish oil supplements, and that they begin eating Crisco and hydrogenated margarine to protect against prostate cancer. And we know, of course, that that is bass-ackwards.
bass-ackwards is correct.
That's right. Because we have Walter Willett, who is an eminent epidemiologist and nutritionist at Harvard, who has suggested that those self-same trans fats, the hydrogenated fatty acids, may be responsible for as many as 60,000 deaths from cancer in general, not just prostate cancer, each year. So how can you reconcile a study that says, in effect, use more trans fats?
Again, no cause and effect here. No cause and effect in 2011. And here we go. We jump 2 years later, 2013, with this new fish oil connection. So what they suggested was that it increased up to 70% the cause, EPA and DHA, not DHA alone, increased the cause of aggressive prostate cancer. But ironically, here again, omega-6 fatty acids decreased the cause of prostate cancer. Meanwhile, virtually every other study you read would say that the ratio between omega-3s and omega-6 are critical. If you have too much omega-6s and not enough omega-3s, that increases the risk of prostate cancer. So this study again said so if you look at both studies, you want to increase your intake of trans fatty acids, increase your intake of omega-6 fatty acids, decrease your risk, your consumption of omega-3 fatty acids, and then that will prevent you from getting prostate cancer. And of course, that's exactly not true, and that's dubious.
Well, and when you look at science, and I think that journalists certainly aren't sophisticated enough to understand this, and unfortunately the general public needs guidance in this. If you're going to put out a theory, you need two things. You need evidence, and maybe a correlation, maybe some data, but you also need mechanism. And unfortunately, mechanism is really tough to find if you're trying to indict omega-3 fatty acids as causing cancer. So can you share with us your opinion on the various ways in which omega-3 fatty acids actually have a protective effect against cancer? Because certainly there's a lot of studies to that effect, literally dozens, perhaps hundreds of studies that show a protective effect.
Absolutely. The main mechanism that I've found is by inhibiting the production of cyclooxygenase 2 enzyme, or better known as COX-2 enzyme, which is an enzyme that leads into all kinds of pro-inflammatory markers and molecules in the system that promotes the development and progression of prostate cancer. That's actually been well documented. So if you inhibit the production of COX-2, then you will decrease your chances of developing prostate cancer, and multiple studies indicate that omega-3 fatty acids do exactly that. One of the main causes of prostate cancer is probably an oversimplification, but one of the main causes is inflammatory markers, things like COX-2 and things like another inflammatory marker called NF-kappa-B. So COX-2, so that's how it works. It inhibits the formation of these inflammatory markers by then. It protects not only from prostate cancer. There's another study that came out. It's funny. A week before, Rod, I don't know if you noticed, there was a study that showed that omega-3 fatty acids prevents breast cancer.
Right. Absolutely. And that's, of course, that didn't make the news.
No.
All right.
Right.
You know, we have kind of a double standard here. From what I understand, and you treat a lot of prostate cancer patients nutritionally because, you know, I'm sure that the urologists there are very happy to turn their patients over to you because they're bombarding their doctors who are pressed for time with all kinds of questions. What can I do? What diet shall I follow? What supplements should I take? And they say, fine, go see Dr. Espinosa because, you know, once we've done the radiation or the surgery on you, you know, they just want to move on to the next case.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're happy to have you in their department.
Sure.
So, you know, you may see patients with advanced prostate cancer. From what I understand, in advanced cancer, there is this wasting process, as we know. People start to lose weight, lose muscle. It's called cancer cachexia. There's actually some evidence that omega-3 fatty acids can be helpful there, too, because they block TNF-alpha, which is a... you know, something that tends to produce some of the side effects of some of the effects of advanced cancer. Has that been your experience?
Absolutely. You know, I very rarely see a prostate cancer patient who is with advanced stage 4 disease. Oftentimes I see them in it's a full spectrum, but in terms of advanced disease, I see them early in stage 4 disease to the point where they're not even on chemo yet.
Okay.
However, like I said,
what you're saying is most of your patients are doing well. They don't get to that point.
They don't get to that point. They never get to that point. You know, I'm trying to be humble about it here, Ron. But
yeah,
you know,
right.
But yeah, they just don't get to that point. They follow the program, and the whole program is going to be into a book. It's called the Capitalist Program. Capitalist is an acronym. Capital A, C, lowercase A, capital P. Is carcinoma of the prostate less stands for lifestyle exercise and smart supplementation program.
And this this is a book of yours that's in the works?
It's in the works. And right. it's a sustainable program for people, a daily program for people to improve their prognosis after diagnosis. So so part of that program involves exercise and exercise involves a little bit of lifting. Weight resistance, pushing
right.
and pulling.
Right.
I cannot, you know, of course, some patients, you know, are resistant to that idea. Oh, no, I'll do a jog. They need to give me a little pushing and pushing. And so those that stay on this program, with smart supplementation, with weight resistance, with exercise, with yoga and a capitalist eating program, which we can go into if you like.
Sure.
They do incredibly well, and they don't get to that point of advanced disease where they become cachexic.
Okay, so going back to the study, one thing that occurred to me, and you know, I think it's in your critique of the study as well as in my critique of the study, which by the way you can read at drhoffman.com, is the possibility that you know it may be the case that there is a correlation. If you look at patients who have prostate cancer, some of them are going to have higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids because most men go along in life kind of oblivious to diet. They eat whatever they want, you know, standard American diet. And then they hit an iceberg, and lo and behold, that gets their attention big time. And they make major changes in their diet. They stop eating red meat, say, and they start eating healthy fish, and they start taking supplements, and among the most popular supplements are omega-3 fatty acids. And so it may be that this study is an example of what's called the post hoc fallacy, which is that, okay, there's a correlation, but it doesn't mean that the correlation is the causation, that the very self-same men who have prostate cancer, they're aware that they might be in trouble, and maybe they're eating more carefully and taking supplements which then tend to boost their levels of omega-3. That's not the cause of the problem. That's the consequence of the cancer and the therapy that they're undertaking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you said it best. You know, there are multiple things. Again, there's so many flaws to this quote-unquote study or so-called study. We don't know if the increase in omega-3, the EPA DHA in their specimen is caused by fish oil supplementation or by a fish intake. If so, we don't
or know even kind of or even a metabolic flaw, because you know there are sometimes things that change the absorption. Maybe it is that the cancer state per se changes the absorption and retention of omega-3 fatty acids. Some people have suggested that the body uses that as a kind of a fire extinguisher when you get cancer, and maybe more of that hangs out in your blood cells when you get cancer, and it's a sign that you need it.
Exactly. That's absolutely right. If indeed this patient population consumed, let's say, dietary supplement fish oils, well,
They never asked. They never looked at that as part of the study.
They never did. But oftentimes patients and probably your listeners will wonder, well, if I do take fish oils, well, which is a better kind?
Yeah.
Consumer Reports had a report indicating that mostly all fish oil supplements have low to no mercury, which is good. But some of them can contain PCBs and other environmental chemicals that's shown to promote different types of cancers, primarily prostate cancer.
Right.
So we don't know if that's the case. We don't know if the type of fish that was consumed were the bigger fish in the sea, as they say, the ones that are highest in mercury. We just don't know. And we don't even know if they consumed any of these things anyway.
Well, frankly, I mean, if you look at, I mean, you've been to the fish store as I have lately, and if you're taking a look at the price of fresh Alaskan sockeye salmon, it's, you know, $25 a pound.
Right.
So the average guy, you know, who's in your practice and you say you got to eat more fish, they're going to tend to go for maybe the cheapest form of farm salmon.
That's
and
right.
I shudder to think, you know, when I go to the salad bar and it, you know, stuff is like, you know, $6.99 a pound, you know, what kind of quality of salmon are they using? Is it coming from China where they have, you know, they just get a bulldozer, dig a hole in the ground and, you know, throw the fish in with some fish feed? And, you know,
that's
who
right.
knows what the quality of that is, whether it's, you know, environmentally polluted. And the same thing for fish oil pills. You know, when you and I prescribe very high quality, you know, triple purified, molecularly distilled fish oil. And, you know, it can be a little pricey, you know, $29.95 for, you know, 120 capsules. And then our patients may say, hey, you know, I just went by Costco and I can get 300
right.
capsules for, they're on sale for $9.99.
Right.
What's the quality of that product? Would that possibly contain more PCBs?
Or rancid. It's just rancid and oxidized.
Right. Which is hazardous to the prostate.
Absolutely. So the bottom line is you definitely want to get fish oils from a high-quality source. And no, I would not stop consuming fish oils. I consume quite a bit myself, quite a few pills myself a day of fish oils. I even kind of put one up on my blog, you know. With some,
right.
I don't know if you
look,
know
look, that. It's harmless. I'm taking it. You know, reassuring your patients.
Reminds me of a lecturer I saw on vitamin D. He came in with a bottle of vitamin D and chugged down the whole bottle right in front of
us. To show how non-toxic it was,
right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that it is protective. In multiple ways, studies have shown that it prevents with Alzheimer's, that it helps with depression. Some studies are contraindicating the fact or disputing the fact that it may have cardiovascular benefits.
Well, you know, I got to comment on that study because I had to do, you know, as you frequently do, I do damage control in these studies all the time. That particular study looked at the effects of one capsule a day of fish oil
exactly.
on cardiovascular disease. And, you know, frankly, if you've got advanced cardiovascular disease and you take one fish oil capsule a day while you're taking statins and beta blockers and blood pressure medications,
right.
it's not going to make a big deal, a whole lot of difference.
It's not. So it's what I call GIGO. GIGO is an acronym for garbage in, garbage out.
Very good.
And that's what happens with these studies. So what I would recommend to your audience is to really look out for credible sources of nutritional information, people that are actually pulling the papers, reading them critically, and then writing about what they read and interpreting it correctly, like your wonderful work, Ron, and your radio show and your blog and your website. There's a few others. I write about these things all the time myself. I think that's the right way to go rather than listening to the latest headlines and news bites and making decisions on what they're saying.
Okay. In brief, in the remaining time we have about 10 minutes, Thank you for sharing some of your valuable time. I know you're in the office and patients are clamoring to see you there at NYU. But can you share with us your recommendations for diet and, you know, perhaps a couple of the leading supplements that might be helpful for men who are concerned about prostate cancer? Perhaps they've got low-grade prostate cancer or they've had surgery and they're concerned about a recurrence. What are some of the highlights of that?
Well, I'll give you some of the highlights, more detailed information. If you don't mind, I'll let them know on my website.
Yeah.
But some of the highlights are very simple. A plant-based Mediterranean type of eating, nutritional lifestyle. What does that mean? That means a lot of plant foods of all different kinds. People always ask me, okay, I get that. All plants, get it, fine. But what's the best vegetable? Okay, if you want to know the best vegetable for prostate cancer, it seems to be the cruciferous kind. Things like broccoli, cauliflower, bok choy, and things like that. They have specific compounds in them that seem to have anti-prostate cancer properties, indole-3 carbinol and things like that. So that's that, a plant-based Mediterranean. Mediterranean is protective against heart disease. Multiple studies have shown that. Well, how about the fact that there is a lot of fish in the Mediterranean diet and it's fish that's pretty much consumed every day, or at least there should be. As I continue to put this capitalist program together on it, one fundamental point is very important for your listeners to know. Most men diagnosed with prostate cancer die from heart disease, not prostate cancer. So a program that only helps with prostate cancer, first of all, is almost impossible to do. Second of all, it should also be very beneficial for heart health. So that's very, so as I tell you this kind of the dietary aspects of it, your audience should keep in mind that it kind of covers all your bases. A lot of spices in this program, Ron, of all kinds, sage, rosemary, thyme, turmeric, spices are medicinal. And they seem to have a lot of anti-inflammatory, anti-tumor properties. In terms of meat products, I am not, and this is one that confuses my patients, I am not opposed to the consumption of red meat up to twice a week. If you look at the literature closely, it does not say that red meat is bad for prostate cancer. What it says is how you prepare it seems to be more damaging. In other words, fast cooking, a lot of the charring and heterocyclic amines, these blackening of the outside of the meat that are potentially carcinogenic. So slow cooking and the best kind is grass-fed organic just because of the difference.
And I tend to agree with you there. I think one of the biggest drawbacks of animal proteins these days is that they're absolutely bear no resemblance to what our primitive ancestors consumed, because they're highly processed, they're chemicalized, they're laden with toxic residues, antibiotic residues, and xenobiotic residues and PCB residues. And, you know, it's really, you have to, you know, be selective about the type of animal proteins that you consume, because you are what you eat eats.
That's absolutely right.
And
that's absolutely right.
You know, if the animals that you're consuming consume industrial silage, that is not going to be good for you.
Absolutely. Processed meats are no good. So what I try to do with my patients is guide them as to what are the best foods individually, so broccoli and meats and things. Also in combination, like a combination of foods, like a plate. What would a natural, good, you know, high-quality plate look like? Sandwiches are probably one of the worst things one can eat. The reason for that is because in a sandwich, let's say you have a hero with ham, cheese, some. Let's put a tomato in there and some iceberg lettuce for argument's sake. Well, in that sandwich, what do you find? You find white flour, possibly one of the worst things that one can eat for prostate cancer, any type of simple carbohydrate or sugars or things like that. This has been very clear in the evidence. Processed meats seem to be one of the worst meats that one can eat. They have all kinds of chemicals and environmental, estrogens and nitrites and things like that. Cheese, well, dairy seems to be one of the poor thing that for prostate cancer that seems to contribute to prostate cancer.
Because it's concentrated animal mammary gland secretions, which, you know, have possibly hormonal implications and also concentrate some of the environmental toxins.
That's right. So, and who, and everyone, every, all my patients, they come in and they're used to eating salad. It's easy, is accessible, it's, you know, it's good for their, they like the taste of it, et cetera. So I sandwiches, I kind of discourage them from eating too many sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of, so low carbohydrate, low simple carbohydrate, high, a lot of plants, some meats are okay. Fish is good. I on my blog, I have about a half a dozen citations showing in the literature that in prospective studies, not retrospective, not looking back, looking forward and showing the benefits of fish consumption.
This is at drgeo.com.
Correct. Drgeo.com. Drgeo.com.
Okay. So what I know you're going to go into great much greater detail on this in your blogs and on your website and also in your upcoming book, but what are the top three or four supplements that you see as being beneficial for prostate prevention and or treatment?
All right. So fish oils is top of that
list. Still up there, despite the study, right?
It's on top of that list. A good quality, a good vitamin D3 supplement.
Right.
I give my patients up to 5 units a day. Some go up to 10.
5,000. Right.
5,000. Right. I'm sorry. That's 5. Right. Correct. 5,000 to 10,000 units a day. It depends on what the blood shows on the blood work shows. Sometimes they after. Yeah, you just give them 2,000, even sometimes 4,000.
And this whole thing with the African-American incidence of prostate cancer, well, it may be in part due to the fact that African-Americans have lower levels of vitamin D. They just don't spend as much time in the sun, and their skin is darker, so there's less vitamin D made.
Absolutely. So it has to be individualized. So I start an African-American male with 5,000 units a day. I start a big guy that weighs, let's say, he's 6 feet, 250, at 5,000 units a day, smaller guy, 5'5", 120, 130, 140 pounds, I start them at 2,000.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So the bigger, the more they need.
Yeah.
And then the third, to give you a good top three, are things like curcumin.
Mm-hmm.
Curcumin being, it inhibits the formation of inflammatory molecules like NF-kappa B. It's shown to have a lot of anti-tumorigenic effects. And I typically start people at about 800 milligrams, and it has to be individualized. Those that have those that are on active surveillance, for example, that haven't been treated for prostate cancer, I start them at between 400 and 800. Those that are more aggressive, with more aggressive disease, I put them up to 3,000 milligrams a day. Studies have shown that up to 8 grams or 8,000 milligrams a day are safe in cancer patients. So.
Cool. Great, and I'm sure there's a whole raft of additional supplements that may find their use there, things like EGCG and other supplements may be helpful as well, of course.
And broccoli extract I use very often, you know, a high-quality, balanced antioxidant formula, and these are two important points, high-quality and balanced. If you just take DL-alpha tocopherol.
And synthetic beta-carotene, for example, you know.
Beta carotene, you're increasing your chances of gaining the development of prostate cancer, probably even the aggressive type. If you take a nice balanced kind with, if it's vitamin D, all the tocopherols, and I use resveratrol, pomegranate, mix carotenoids, etc., then those are more protective.
Great. All right. Well, you can get additional information at the excellent website of Dr. Geo Espinosa at drgeo.com. And I want to thank you for your generous sharing of time with us. I know you're busy over there at NYU.
Right.
And, you know, we're on the same page when it comes to that abysmal fishy fish oil study. I think we were both probably typing. I just got furious that night. You know, as you did, I was just up till late at night, you know, reading the article and looking stuff up and refuting it. I didn't get much sleep that night.
So you knew you had some damage control.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what's gratifying? As I got to say that I don't think I've seen a study that has attracted as much in the way of rebuttals almost ever. I mean,
you're absolutely
so,
right.
So we can be comforted in the thought that great minds think alike, because so many of our colleagues have also weighed in with their serious reservations about the fish oil is bad for your prostate study. That's Turns out that we think that's a very, very flawed study. Well, thank you very much for your insights and observations. You can get back to work now.
Thank you. I'd rather keep talking to you, Ron, and your audience, but I guess we can't do that.
You got appointments and people to see. Okay. So when your new book comes out, please let us know so that we can get you back on and you can talk in detail about your program for prevention and treatment of prostate cancer using an integrative approach, the best of high-tech medicine and the best of natural therapies.
Thanks
for joining us, Gio. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks very much for joining us.